How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Dave Meltzer here, Wrestling Observer Radio, November 3rd, 2015, figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. We have a giant list of news stories to talk about here today, plus Raw, which was another show without a lot of big stars and probably was better for it. This was another good show.
I thought it was a show. You know, the only big thing to me was like, you know, the return of the Usos, which was good. The elimination match was, I mean, there was some decent to good wrestling. And I think that the direction and everything was pretty clear. You know, they did a lot of things that, you know, to set up Survivor Series, little things like the way the eliminations were. I mean, I thought it was well booked, but I didn't think that there was anything. I didn't think it was like anything like a great TV show, but it was a solid show, I guess.
I thought the Survivor Series main event was very good. I thought the women's match was very good.
The women's match was good. The Survivor Series match was good, but I didn't think it was that good. I mean, it was long. It was all right. I mean, I think that I've probably been spoiled because of the stuff that I've watched today. So,
one of those days.
Yeah, but actually, you know, I mean, the big match that I watched after, so that wasn't that wouldn't have spoiled it for me. I mean, I thought the match was fine, but I thought it was kind of by the book and it was all right, but it didn't like blow me away or anything like that. I thought it was, you know, it was solid and total story and everything like that. But, I thought Raw was all right, but it didn't blow me away or anything.
Well, let's talk about the big story on Raw, and that is this is leading towards the anniversary of Survivor Series, the 24th anniversary. I guess it's.
No, it'd be 29 at least.
29th, whatever it is.
Well, the first one was in 87 because it was, so this would be 29. 28 years, but so it's a 28-year anniversary, but the 29th show.
Why are either of these numbers all that special?
They're not. They just throw it out there, and they always use anniversary wrong because it would be the 28th anniversary and 29th show, but they always use the 29 number, and it's just how they do it. It's no big deal, but yeah.
Well, regardless, they had footage of various Survivor Series moments from history throughout the show, and that led us to a clip from last year's Survivor Series where Sting has vanished from history.
Yes.
What's happening here?
You're asking the wrong person.
Is this not weird?
Yeah, it's really weird. It's like magic. I mean, I watched it and it's like, wow. But that wasn't, you know, I mean, that one was at least unexplainable. I mean, like, they had another, you know, some of the other ones where they, I think in the first one, they acted like, you know, a match that was not the main event was the main event because the actual main event had Hogan. So it was usual WWE anyway. But the Sting one surprised me just because it was like, why did they do that? I mean, I thought it was weird enough that they showed it because the whole story of that match was that the Authority, you know, was banished forever and they were actually back like a couple weeks later. So it's kind of like we had this big pay-per-view to accomplish something that accomplished nothing. So why show you that you like ripped off the fans with a stipulation last year? So when they started showing it, I was thinking like, you know, I would think I would want to avoid showing this. And then when it was over, it's like, well, golly, I mean, the big thing on that show was the return of Sting. That was like the big thing on that show. And it was erased from history. And I mean, like, even if the guy's injured and can't wrestle, I mean, you wouldn't want to erase him from history, would you? I mean, they erased Hogan from history, but I get that. So I don't know.
Just trying to think of unless something happened with Sting. I'm trying to think of their weird psychology of why they wouldn't want to show that.
Well, there's obviously something. It's just a question of what weird psychology it is.
Well, I mean, does it have to do with Sting? Does it have to do with they don't want to remind you of a bad storyline? Does it have to
If they didn't want to remind you of a bad storyline, they wouldn't have even shown it because Sting was not a bad storyline. The thing where the Authority had to leave forever and then coming back 3 weeks later, that was a bad storyline. That's what they showed you, the bad storyline. They didn't show you the good part of it. Like the good part of it was the big, you know, return of Sting. So it was like, it was actually the opposite. It's like, we're trying to show you that last year we did this stipulation that we ripped you off on, but not what everyone was talking about when it was over is that like Sting came back or came in for the first time. So I don't get it.
Well, we'll probably find out something in the next couple of days. So Roman Reigns came out to open the show, and he got another good reaction. And he cut a quick promo about how he was going to beat Seth and become the next WWE World Heavyweight Champion. Out came Seth to debate this, obviously. He cackled about WrestleMania. Said that Roman had gone out and taken everything that Brock could dish out. And what did it do for him? Nothing, because Seth cashed in, made history, and won the title. And he said that everybody was going to remember Roman as the guy that used to carry Seth Rollins' bags. So Roman challenged him to a fight right now. And Seth, the defiant heel challenger, strode to the ring to have this fight. But it was stopped by the Authority. Hunter and Steph came out. They are unabashedly heels this week. They polled the fans to see if they wanted to see this match. The fans all said yes. And then they alerted us, no, you're not going to get it tonight. You're going to get it at Survivor Series. We're not giving away a match of this caliber here in Denver. And they plugged the show. And then Hunter said, since Roman wants a fight tonight, and since Survivor Series is coming up, let's do a 5-on-5 elimination match. Team Seth versus Team Roman. Both of you guys go back and get partners and choose wisely. This was better than your usual 20-minute boring promo, I thought.
Yeah, it was quicker, so it was good in that way.
Dolph Ziggler faced Kevin Owens.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that, like, with Roman, they were very careful to not let him talk for too long before Seth.
Good!
Oh, I know it's good.
This should be how they do it every time.
Yeah.
You know what is funny? By the end of the show, he got cheered, like, the whole show, and it's kind of funny to me that they finally found a way to get the guy cheered, which is to put him against a guy who has annoyed everybody by being a poorly booked champion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, whatever works for you. Dolph hit a dropkick early, sent Owens outside. Tyler Breeze came out on the ramp. They had him sit at ringside with the whole love seat and velvet rope gimmick. And Dolph is selling his bad knee. He makes his big comeback. Tyler and Summer get up and start taking selfies. Of course, Dolph is distracted. He gets push-up powerbombed and pinned, which, by the way, the fans popped huge for. And then Tyler got in the ring afterwards, did a bunch of selfies with him. Dolph sucker-punched him, but then he got laid out. And then Summer and Tyler took more selfies. And that's, I guess, your next feud for Survivor Series.
I thought, yes. Ziggler and Tyler Breeze and Owens and Dean Ambrose is what it looks like, yeah.
Any other thoughts on this?
No, it was basic stuff. It was fine. It was a good match.
Seth met with Kevin Owens backstage and was buttering him all up and said, Kevin, can you imagine the two of us title versus title in the main event of WrestleMania? And Owens says, well, you know, that would be cool. And Seth said, well, what do you think about teaming up with me tonight in the main event? And Owen said, okay, but he said, you owe me a favor. We'll see if they remember that.
Owens will remember it.
Renee interviewed Becky. Becky can't wait to get her hands on Paige tonight. She needs a new character immediately. Brie showed up, said she was going to win the four-way tonight and get a shot at Charlotte, the pay-per-view. And, yeah. Becky's not a bad talker, but I'm not sure about this character.
No, that was what it was. She called Brie Nikki Bella's pathetic doormat of a sister, and Brie called her Charlotte's wacky sidekick. So that was fine.
No Nikki on this show. No Nikki in the match.
Nope.
No mention of Nikki.
That was the only mention, pretty much, yeah.
Is that odd? Should I read too much into that?
I do not know. I guess we'll find out.
She did have that weird Twitter thing that she did last Monday. Do you remember this?
Yeah, but she worked all the... did she work the house? No, she didn't work the house shows this weekend.
Maybe she is gone for a while.
Maybe she is. I guess we'll find out in Dublin Wednesday, because she's booked in Dublin.
Miz and Cesaro. You know, I don't want to rant and rave about Cesaro, but...
He got to win. It was fine. It was good.
It's just amazing.
He's great.
So popular. He did win, so it was all great. I don't even know why I'm ranting about this, but he's going to be beaten again soon enough. It's just amazing that they beat him and they beat him and they beat him.
Probably next week, yeah.
Or on SmackDown. They beat him 9 million times. He's still so over. Like, is this not... Why am I wasting my time?
He's been like that. That's been the case for 2 years now.
I know, but they beat a lot of guys, and people give up hope, and they still love Cesaro. And they still book him the same way.
Yeah, but I mean, I remember they used to beat Matt Hardy like a drum for years to, you know, constantly.
He was one of these guys, yeah.
Yeah, even worse than Cesaro, and people still cheered for him, and more than Cesaro in some ways, actually in most ways. So it's like, there are some guys that they're just going to cheer for, you know? I mean, they like him, you know? I mean, as far as, yeah, someday too late, they'll figure it out, and probably will have squandered the opportunity. Actually, may have been squandered already. Although they could still, you know, I mean, they could
He's
still
good
do
enough.
They could still do something with him now if they wanted to, but they don't seem to be. I mean, like the way this match was done and everything, it was like they gave him a win because it was against Miz and it was fill time, and it wasn't like he was put in the main event. You know, like in that 10-man, which the top guys were, and with all those guys in the main event, they. You know, they needed guys on the show wrestling, like Miz, that they usually don't even put in the ring. So it wasn't like this was a vote of confidence for Cesaro. It was just kind of like, okay, we need a match, and we'll do this match. And of these two guys, who do you put over? And Cesaro's a pretty easy choice. So that's what it was.
You'd think. But yeah, it was fun. He beat him up. He gave him the giant swing. He put him in the sharpshooter, and he beat him.
Yeah. Did all those cool nip-ups, too.
Yeah, he was great. He's always great.
Yeah, no, the guy's great, yeah. Yeah, he's one of the best guys in the company.
You have not seen The Table for Three with Cesaro, I presume.
No. I did watch Breaking Ground tonight, though.
We'll talk about that after this, but Cesaro on this show is like, he's so smart.
He's really smart, yeah.
He's smart, he's well-spoken, and you watch this, and he's so determined to be something in this business. And it almost makes you more furious when you watch it.
Yeah, and he's very quick-witted, too.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, I know. I've seen him in action. And no, they've completely missed the boat on him. He should be a big, big star. And him and Kevin Owens, from a personality standpoint, they both could do so much more with those two guys.
So the Wyatts came out, and let's cut to the chase. Storyline is that Bray Wyatt has eaten the soul of The Undertaker and Kane, and he now possesses their powers, and he can do magic, such as summon thunder and lightning in the arena. In 2015.
I couldn't wait for this interview to end for some reason.
Because it's so corny.
I was listening to it, and it's like, his delivery's good, but, you know, it's like, for about the first 2 minutes, it was all right, and then it's kind of like, okay, I've kind of seen all this already, so
yeah, we've
like,
seen it for 25 years or more. 30 years. How long has it been? 1990?
Bray Wyatt doing interviews?
No, Undertaker. Undertaker and magic and lightning and all of this.
Yeah, well, that's 1991 or something, yeah, or 92. 91.
Yeah, not
no,
my 90, thing.
No, November 1990.
90, yeah.
Yeah, November 1990, yeah.
So then we had the Lucha Dragons versus King Baird and Sheamus. Somebody figured out that, in fact, people like luchadors when they do crazy high-flying. And so they came out here. They did a bunch of high-flying. Beat on Sin Cara for a while.
I mean, it's their month to get the title shot. That's all.
Well, Kalisto... So,
I don't sense that this is going to be a long-term thing. I think it's just kind of like... they won the four-way, so it would be completely stupid to beat them before they get their title shot, since they earned the title shot.
Well, they won here. Sin Cara and Sheamus end up outside. Kalisto hit Barrett with the Selena del Sol and pinned him. Big pop for the finish.
This was a good match. Yeah. This was a good match. I liked it. You know, Barrett did a real good job. Sin Cara worked most of the way. Kalisto was very good with his hot tag. So, yeah, it's good stuff.
Jack Swagger met with Zeb Coulter, and Jack is not into this whole Mex-America thing. And Zeb says, we got to unite, not divide. They're discussing the situation when Alberto Del Rio walks in, and he tells Jack to stay away from Zeb and their business. Are they really going to do Alberto Del Rio versus Jack Swagger?
It looks like it.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they've done before.
That's a good
right?
argument for not paying him $1.45 million if they're going to feud those two together.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
Alberto then faced Truth.
God, was this sad. The crowd was so dead for this match.
I wonder why.
The crowd was dead for a lot of stuff, actually, but they were. This was, I think this was the deadest for sure.
Well, you bring a guy in, everybody cheers him like crazy, you confuse the hell out of him, and then he comes out here for a match with Truth after setting up a feud with Jack Swagger. And I'm sure they're baffled as to why nobody was into Alberto Del Rio here on this show.
Yeah.
He won, at least.
Yeah, double foot stomp off the Tree of Woe spot. So I guess that's his new finish.
Yeah, that's his new finish, I guess. No more armbar.
He did
work over the arm.
He did an armbar over the ropes. But he hasn't been using it for the finish. Like I said, I like the armbar finish a lot better than that one. But,
I do as well.
Yeah.
Especially if you've got Finn Balor that's going to come up someday.
Yeah, that's right, for sure, because it's the freaking same finish.
Seth recruited the New Day backstage, and they played the trombone, they all danced, they got Seth to dance. It's very wacky. These are main eventers, I might add. JoJo interviewed Sasha about whether there was pressure on her to deliver tonight. This was pretty horrible. Then we had the four-way. Becky, Sasha, Brie, and Paige, fatal four-way for the number one contendership. Was the usual four-way match where two girls end up outside, then two girls in the ring do a whole bunch of spots, and then two girls end up outside and two more girls do a bunch of spots. They had all sorts of cool stuff. They did the stacked-up superplex spot. Becky
that was
made
really
it.
That was really the spot that turned the match around. It was like the match was fine all the way through, but the people were just dead. And then when they did that Tower of Doom spot, the crowd just got into that. That spot always gets over.
Yes.
It's wacky. It's like when you overdo it, I think it's like really stupid and contrived, but it always gets over. So I wouldn't suggest not doing it. And then from that point on, they were like really into the match, and it was a good match. Yeah.
Yep. Sasha put Becky in the bank statement. Paige broke it up, and then Paige posted Sasha and hit Becky with the rampage and got the win. So yeah. It is Sasha. I'm sorry. Paige versus Charlotte at Survivor Series, which is fine because I've been very impressed with Paige lately. I think she's the most complete girl they've got.
No, Sasha's the most complete girl. But
as far as like promos and personality and everything?
Oh, yeah. But it's Paige's turn. I mean, in the sense that it's Sasha can wait her turn. I don't want to say her turn because that's a stupid way of saying it. But the reality is
it is her turn.
It's like, no, Paige is the one that's been cutting the promos, and Paige is the one that should be getting the shot now. Sasha will have her day, I have no doubt, because she's the best of all of them, so it'll come. And when she's on top, that's when they're going to have the really good matches, but it's just not that time yet. So I had no doubt Paige was going to win, but if people are going like, oh, you know, Sasha should win, it's like, don't worry about that one. She'll be in that picture soon enough, and right now Paige is the one that's, you know, she's the one with the angle with Charlotte, so she's the one who should have won. And as far as, you know, it was also interesting that, you know, Becky Lynch was the one who lost, which actually, you know, she could have lost or Brie should have lost. I mean, Sasha shouldn't have lost. Either of the other two could have lost. That's not a big deal. But they really, laid out the match for Becky Lynch to shine a lot before losing. So when I was watching the match, it was like, Becky Lynch is losing this match for sure, you know, because they're just shining her a lot, which is fine, you know. And again, her turn will come too. She's very charismatic, so I'm sure she'll get her shot. It's just somebody has to lose, and it's their turn to lose. That's all.
Byron then interviewed Paige, and she said the three other girls in the match were all losers. Everybody in Denver who didn't like it was a loser, and Charlotte was going to be a loser at the pay-per-view. Renee interviewed Charlotte backstage, and an overly scripted promo.
Oh, yeah.
Glad Paige won. It's obvious she'll do anything to win, but so will I. It was rotten what she did to us last week, etc., etc., etc. Says that Paige made this personal, and these promos are not working for Charlotte. I don't know what they can do, but not
maybe
this.
Yeah. What can they do? Just have her do promos, but that ain't going to happen.
New Day, Seth Rollins, Kevin Owens against Roman Reigns, Ryback, Dean Ambrose, and the Usos. Jey Uso is back from his shoulder injury. A 5-on-1 elimination match.
5-on-5.
5-on-5. Where did I get 5-on-1? New Day elimination or New Day promo before the match. And they talked about all their favorite movies, books, etc., all of which have Survivor in the title. Seth came out. They performed his entrance on their pretend instruments. Xavier is back, although he was immediately super kicked and splashed by an Uso for the pin, and it was the end of him.
Yeah, I guess that tells you all you need to know about getting married on a pay-per-view weekend.
I guess.
My God, 31 seconds.
31 seconds.
That's how long the dude lasted.
You know what? When he got in there and he started ranting, I was like, this dude's going to get pinned immediately. I knew it, and I wasn't even thinking about the wedding. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
They finally admitted that Randy Orton was going to be out for a while with a shoulder injury. They told us to go to WWE.com, which is a loyal Raw viewer. I did. And this is what it says. 3 weeks ago, it was reported that Randy Orton did not appear on Monday Night Raw at the American Airlines Center in Dallas, although it is still unclear as to whether Bray Wyatt was directly responsible for the Viper's absence that night.
If he was, he was hiding in a garbage can.
Yeah.
That could be it. But if that garbage can weighed 300 pounds and Randy Orton didn't know it, that's probably how he separated his shoulder.
That's right. For those that don't know, Randy Orton separated his shoulder carrying out the trash.
That's right.
Which, thank God you brought that up, because it reminded me I have to carry out the trash tonight. And hopefully I will not dislocate my shoulder. Because
do you have a history of it?
No, I don't.
Randy, I mean, that's the problem, is Randy's got the history of it. That's why he's going to need surgery. Because if he continues, well, he's got a partially torn rotator cuff. He's got a dislocated shoulder. He's got a couple of other things wrong with the shoulder. The guy needs surgery. I mean, that's all there is to it. He was working on a bad shoulder for a long time anyway, and so probably didn't do himself any favors doing that. And hopefully he gets the surgery soon, because they say it's 4 to 6 month recovery, and I'd say closer to 6 than 4 generally for that type of operation. So, it's similar to the one that Sami Zayn had. Tommy, had that, and they've all been out of action for a long time.
So, not good.
No, definitely not good. But it's not, you know what, though? It's not good for him, obviously, but I don't think it's necessarily so bad, because the thing is like him, Cena and Orton being gone, it's like, number one, it's made Roman Reigns the star of the show, which is actually starting to take, and it's forcing them to, push, Dean Ambrose and things like that. So it's like, it's not really the worst thing. And then when he comes back, it's not like Randy Orton, he could use a break for 6 months. It's actually good in that sense. But yeah, I mean, I don't like to see a guy go under the knife, to get him a rest. That's the problem, is they the only rest these guys get is surgery. And I wish that they would just have a way to let guys just kind of leave and freshen up and go somewhere and then come back when people want to see him, as opposed to just have him out there week after week for 8 straight years.
So then we had in this match here, Usos with a giant dive to the outside, big splash on Kofi. They pinned him. It's now 5 versus 3, advantage baby faces. Big E hit Jey Uso with the big ending, 4-3, advantage baby faces. Owens then pinned Jimmy with the pop-up powerbomb to even it up. Roman tagged in. They got the heat on him for a long, long time. There was a deal outside where there was a train wreck spot. Ryback ran over Big E and ran over him so hard and fast that he ran into the barricade, looked like he almost killed himself. And finally, Roman backdropped Seth over the top rope, tagged in Ryback. He runs wild. They did a six-way. And finally, he hit the big ending
Shell shock.
Yeah, Big E went for the big ending. And Ryback jumped behind him, hit the shell shock, pinned Big E. So now 3-2, advantage baby faces. Seth then pinned Ryback with the pedigree to tie it up. So it was Roman and Ambrose versus Rollins and Owens. So Ambrose is running wild for a while. Roman's broke up a pin. And finally, Seth hit Owens with the flying knee by mistake, hit his own partner. Ambrose hit Kevin Owens with dirty deeds, pinned him. So it's now Seth versus Ambrose and Roman Reigns, 2-on-1. Seth tries to flee repeatedly. He is thrown back in the ring. He tries to flee, throw it back in the ring, tries to flee. Finally, he grabs a chair, hits both guys for the disqualification. Because after going 1-17, now is the time to protect this guy leading into Survivor Series. So they don't beat him.
They actually could have beat him.
They could have beat him.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't have been the worst thing in the world. I mean, it actually probably would have been the right finish to just beat him. The problem is they beat him so much that it really wouldn't be the right finish now. But normally, if he was a normal champion who hadn't been beaten like 19 out of 20 matches or whatever it was, this would have been the time. This actually was the time to beat him.
Yeah. The only thing I can figure, and maybe I'm totally wrong about this, is that Roman Reigns actually is going to win the title. And so Vince suddenly figured out, well, we need to do something with Seth and make him unbeaten leading into Survivor Series.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know.
I mean, either Roman Reigns wins the title or Dean Ambrose turns on...
Yes.
I mean, I can't come up with... You know, if they do a DQ or something like that...
Oh, God, a Survivor Series?
Well, it's not so much Survivor Series. It's like it's Roman challenging for the title. It's like if they do like a screwed up finish on that, it's just not the right thing for his momentum. He either needs to win or he needs to get screwed by his buddy. You know, if they do like a, you know, one of those weird finishes where, you know, he doesn't lose but he doesn't win, man, that wouldn't be good.
So they did the chair shot to DQ finish, and then he was beating up Roman with the chair, but Roman made a comeback, hit him with a Superman punch. Seth ran for his life. Everybody booed. And that was the end of the show. So there you go. Another Raw. We got 2 weeks until Survivor Series. So next week is the go-home show.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's talk about some of this stuff that caused this Raw to not be so great for you, like the Best of the Super Juniors tournament, this Dragon Gate match. What have you heard about this?
Oh, the Masaaki Mochizuki match with Shingo Takagi on yesterday's Dragon Gate show is like... That match is so incredible. I mean, I'm at a loss for words. It's just the performance by Mochizuki. It's just like it was one of the greatest single match performances I have ever seen.
Ever seen, everybody.
Ever seen the Mochizuki.
Dave told me this before the show, and I was like, wait a second.
Ever seen. I mean, this is like, it was better than Shawn Michaels. I mean, and even actually a lot better than any Shawn Michaels I've ever seen. This is... I just can't get over it. It was like a combination of an incredible performance and one of those like Shibata Ishii type of matches where it's just they just beat the hell out of each other. But instead of like for like 15 minutes, they do it for, I don't know. I didn't get the time. I think it was right around 30 minutes. I mean, it just never ended. It finally did end and Takagi beat him. But it was just like, oh, God. I mean, if you're voting for match of the year, you have to watch this match. Because, man, I this match was incredible. I've seen some awesome matches this year, but I think this may have blown everything away. I mean, it was funny because before I watched it, I was almost ready to be disappointed because I had like one email after another, a few messages and stuff from other people, and they're just going like, "This is the best match of the year by far. This is the best match of the year by far,
they said.
By far. Yeah, so I'm going like, yeah, okay, you know, better than Nakamura and Ibushi. Yeah, whatever. And I mean, it wasn't artistically better than Nakamura and Ibushi as far as that goes, but it was more along the lines of Suzuki and Sugiura match, which was from a couple weeks ago in Noah, which was also one of the best matches of the year, but it was like a combination of Suzuki and Sugiura was just two guys beating the shit out of each other, and it was almost like it's too brutal. And this one was almost too brutal in that sense, too, where you're just going like, God, it's a work. You don't have to kill each other like this. But it was just, you know, it's like a Shibata match, you know, but it was just so many little, not even little things, big things. It's like, I just, oh, my God. The timing of when they did everything, what they did, how they kicked out, it was just... The crowd going nuts. I mean, I kind of know the storyline going in, but I believe that you could watch this match, neither guy, and not know the storyline, and you'll still think it's one of the greatest matches you've ever seen in your life. It's just, unless you just don't, you know, I mean, you just go in there and go, oh, they were just beating each other up. You know, it's like, I don't like that. And they were beating each other up, and Mochizuki was taking stuff that, you know, at times you just go, why is he taking this stuff? It's just, he doesn't need to take this stuff. This match is incredible without it. But he took it, and it probably just made the match even more incredible. Yeah, it was a match, a strong match of the year candidate on that, and on that one. So, yeah. The Korakuen show, which was also yesterday, that was the New Japan show. That was a good show, too. It was A lot better than the week before.
You know what's funny about that show is I was reading your review in The Observer about the last show and how the crowd was so quiet that you could hear people calling spots.
Actually, you could hear people calling spots on this show, too.
Yeah. In the Kyle O'Reilly Bobby Fish match. I mean, they were calling spots so loud, I was getting ready to do spots in my living room.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I could hear them calling spots. But this crowd was better than last week's, but yeah. The thing is like when you have no commentary, when they do these shows with no commentary, and the Japanese crowd is like they pop for moves and they pop for twists and turns, but in between, they're quiet. So when you're calling spots, which is the in-between, there's no noise, especially when there's no announcer screaming. And it's like you just hear the next move.
When it's only Japanese commentary, I have no problem with it. I enjoy the Japanese commentators. I can't understand a word they're saying, but
they're great.
They're awesome.
Yeah.
Now, I know some people don't like these shows with no commentary, but I've seen so many horrible commentary teams that I didn't mind this show one bit with no announcers. It was
No, I didn't either. This was, but you know what?
I would prefer no announcers to bad announcers.
Agreed. Absolutely agreed. Because no announcers don't ruin the match for you.
That's right.
Bad announcers do. But this show, like from top to bottom, every match was good. These guys are really good. I mean, like all these guys are good wrestlers anyway. But every match was good. The show built where it was like, I don't want to say every match was better than the match before, because actually I thought like the first five matches were all about the same, other than the Nakamura match, which I didn't really think was the Nakamura eight man, which it served its purpose. Like the booking made complete sense. It was Nakamura, Yano, Sakuraba, and Yoshihashi against Carl Anderson, Doc Gallows, Bad Luck Fale, and Tama Tonga. And the whole thing is that Carl Anderson is challenging on the 7th, so that's Saturday night, although it's Friday night our time. And so on Friday night, he's challenging Nakamura for the Intercontinental title. So the story of the match was just Carl Anderson has to look good. So I'm watching this match, and it's all about Carl Anderson looking good. Like, everybody does their things, but Carl Anderson's the standout. And he hits Nakamura with a gun stun off the top rope, and Nakamura is laid out and rolls out of the ring, and then he hits Yoshihashi with the same move out of nowhere, kind of a Randy Orton finish, gets the pin, and Nakamura is still selling, and they're challenging Nakamura to get in, but he's all banged up. And it was just like, well, it's like so basic, but it's just what it was. It was fine. It was good. I was raving about Chad Gable the other day, and he's great. You know, technically, watching Jay White, and they're both pretty much, you know, same stage, Jay White's technically better. He's more advanced than Chad Gable. Chad Gable has more personality, for sure, and I think Chad Gable's a surefire superstar, but Jay White is just, that guy's so good for being a rookie. So anyway, the opening match, I mean, the thing with these guys in New Japan, with Shota Tanaka, Yohei Komatsu, Dave Finley, Jay White, they actually had a six-man tag on this one, but they're always in there on these big shows working like short matches. And I always think that, God, and then they're always great matches or very good matches. And it's like, why don't they just let these guys go like 13 minutes? But it's like their role is to do like 8-minute matches or 7-minute matches. And so it's always like they just have to come in, they do their spots, they're so good. But you just, they're better than you get a chance to see them at, so to speak. But I mean, their match was good, really good finish. Everything was good. So the key stuff on the show is, they had a 6-man tag with Okada, Tomohiro Ishii, and Gedo against Tanahashi, Honma, and Taguchi, where Okada pinned Taguchi with a Rainmaker. But this was very good action. Good stuff. You know, a lot of Honma and Ishii, because they're wrestling for the NEVER Championship on Saturday. So they were kind of the focus. And Tanahashi and Okada, of course, you know, building up their Tokyo Dome. You know, very good. Then the Young Bucks against Seidel and Ricochet in the tournament, which I think Seidel and Ricochet are just a fantastic team.
They are awesome.
Yeah.
Seidel in particular. I know that Ricochet athletically, all of his cool spots, I mean, he's great. But I just think Seidel is just...
Seidel's the most underrated wrestler.
Amazing.
In yeah, he is so freaking great. But these guys, what's so great about these guys as a team is like at the end when they did the double shooting star press finish, it's like when they do stuff like that, it's like their timing is perfect. They both do it like they're freaking synchronized swimmers. I mean, that's how they're, it's just, those guys are so good. And the, you know, the Young Bucks are great opponents for them anyway. This match was great. Yeah. So, they did double shooting star press and Matt Seidel pinned Matt. So they advanced. They go to the finals against Romero and Beretta. And I could see Romero and Beretta against Fish and O'Reilly start very – it didn't start slow. The crowd started quiet. They actually wrestled well the whole match. They went 20 minutes. But I was thinking, like, they're having a hard time following that great match. And it's, you know, Fish and O'Reilly against Romero and Beretta in the main event at Cork. And, you know, these guys are, generally speaking, low on the card. So it was kind of like they had their work cut out for them. And by the end of the match, they had them. I mean, the last, whatever it was, 5 minutes were great. I thought it was an excellent match. Romero and Beretta went over with a dude buster assisted with a missile drop kick on Bobby Fish. So the tournament, the key to the tournament is that you had, Fish and O'Reilly are the champions. Romero and Beretta beat them. So, you know, they should get another championship shot. They'd already lost the last one. So I could see going either way with this one. I actually, if I was going to book it, I would probably wouldn't have put them over. But I see why. You're making two challengers in the tournament instead of one, and I guess that's good. Because so the finals are going to be Seidel and Ricochet against Romero and Beretta. And Seidel and Ricochet need to win. They're just too good not to win it. And so that should be the Tokyo Dome as Fish and O'Reilly against Seidel and Beretta. I guess you can, I mean, Seidel and Ricochet and what did I say? Fish and O'Reilly.
Yeah.
So I mean, the whole thing is, I think the idea of the tournament here is that you don't get to see Fish and O'Reilly against Seidel and Ricochet until the Tokyo Dome, as opposed to having them do the match here, having the Ricochet and Seidel win the match to set up the championship match. So I kind of, when I see it that way, it does make sense that way as well. So Corkin was this was better than last week's show. I mean, last week's show wasn't a bad show, just a bad crowd. This week's show is just sitting there, like, you know, 2.5 hours of real fun wrestling, every match good. And then Friday will probably be really good. Although the lineup isn't the best. And, you know, I mean, the big news there is Kota Ibushi, actually, with herniated disc in his neck. So he's going to be out for a long, long time, like Randy Orton, which is really too bad because he's awesome. And man, I hate to see that. He's had a lot of problems, which, you know, and a lot that people don't know, like broken fingers and things like that he just works on, you know, doesn't matter, broken hands. And I mean, he's had a lot of injuries that he just goes through. And I think that's probably what happened here, is that he just keeps getting hurt and he keeps working. And, you know, he was numb on one side of the body, and then they checked him out and it was like, you know, he's got some big problems. So hopefully he can make a big recovery, but it's going to be a long time. It's never a good time to be out, but in Japan, this is probably not a good time for him to be out. So they were going to do, on the show, they were going to do Tanahashi and Ibushi against Sakuraba and Okada, which actually I thought was probably going to be like a really awesome match. But Shibata is going to end up teaming with Tanahashi, so they're still going to have a really good match. And, Romero and Beretta and Seidel and Ricochet, and then there's a couple other big ones. Ishii and Hanma, which I talked about, yeah. And then AJ Styles, who's still banged up, and Fale against Yano and Yoshihashi. And then Shelly, Kushida, Fish and O'Reilly against the Young Bucks, Chase Owens, and Kenny Omega. So those are the top matches on that show.
All right, so you watched the newest edition of Breaking Ground. It is going to be airing every Monday after Raw. What'd you think of this week's show, the demise of poor Devin?
Yeah, I mean, the show was all... I mean, the things, there were things in there that I found completely amusing. And you know, just completely amusing. Because it's like they have... It's like opening... they brought in, like, in the classroom. It's all these people in, like, their first day, but it's really not. Well, I guess it's really not their first day, but in the classroom they have Robbie Brookside, you know, and he's explaining, you know, basic day one speech, right? So it's like, you know, you got ZZ there, and you got Sarah Lee there, and you got Josh and Amanda from, you know, the original cast members from Tough Enough. They're all there, and they're new, and then there's a couple other people, and then I see Kana there. I mean, she's sitting there in the front row, and she's like
Asuka.
Acting like she's Asuka. She's like a student, and I'm thinking, it's like, okay, you got ZZ, who doesn't know anything, who's probably going to be cut any day now, and all these guys who are just green and learning, and then you've got this girl sitting here who's better than, like, every guy on the main roster, with maybe the exception of Cesaro and Seth Rollins. You know what I mean? And she's sitting there like she's day one at wrestling school, and it's like, you know, we're going to teach you, you know, we're going to teach you all these things. I'm thinking, like, you know, it's like you freaking have, like, this freaking genius, and you know, the college, you know, PhD, and you're sitting in, you're having her, you know, learn first grade English. You know what I mean? It's like, this was like, it was the most amazing thing. You had Biff Busick was there too, and I'm thinking, like, I've been watching Biff Busick, and this guy is, like, really, really good. And he's been trained, you know, he's trained by Lance years ago. He's been all over. He's been to PWG. The guy's had great matches all over. And he's sitting there in kindergarten, you know what I mean? Like, learning, you know, this is how you tie your wrestling boots, and, you know what I mean, with freaking Sarah Lee. I was just like, it was amusing. I mean, it's just amusing. I think that, like, when you compare it to Hard Knocks, it's just not even close. They're not in the same league. It's a try. I was entertained by the whole show. You know, it was what it was. I was kind of looking to see if I would, you know, I mean, I could see all the different tall guys they got out there, and giants and pretty girls, and they're kind of giving their speeches on everything, and they cut Devin, you know, which was what it was. And I think that they cut another girl because she's got a rod in her back, and so they didn't want her taking bumps, so they just cut her. She was brought in for a tryout.
Oh, for a tryout, I was going to say.
Yeah.
That she'd been signed. I was like, how'd she get all the way through this whole process with a rod in her back, and they just figured out she couldn't take bumps?
Well, why was she in a tryout?
I don't know.
And I don't even know what the reason is that she had a tryout. You know, they had a whole bunch of people in tryouts, and they brought 50 people in, and you just see them kind of being evaluated, and you see, you know, the ones that you know, one person did a promo, and all the coaches just crapped on it, which was funny because, you know, he did, you know, it was a bunch of cliches, which it was, and they all got mad at him for doing cliches on a promo, and they're going like, have you been in a ring? And it's like, no. And it's like, well, we talked to you 6 months ago. Why didn't you go in a ring? Because he's going like, oh, this is my dream. This is this. And it's like, well, you know, have you done anything in the last 6 months? Well, no. So it's like, well, how is it your dream? And they started ripping on him. And then some other woman is out there, and she's talking about how her dad just died, and they just love this promo. And I didn't, you know, it was like, her dad died. And I don't know. The promo wasn't anything special. I didn't think there was that big of a difference, but they all loved her. So I think that everybody was kind of like overdoing it in both directions. It's kind of like exaggerated reactions. It didn't feel real to me in that sense. It felt like everybody was kind of like trying to dramatize and make things more than they were in a lot of cases watching it. But like I said, you know, it was nobody. There was no Baron Corbin like last week, where there was someone where you just go in there. I mean, Bayley to an extent, you know, you watch her on it, and it's kind of like you really like her, but she's got that quality anyway. So she was pretty good.
So is the show 1 hour now?
It was 38 minutes, this one.
38, okay. Because someone told me it was an hour, and I watched last week's show, and I was like, how are you going to get an hour out of this?
Yeah. They had the other thing, which was completely contrived to me, this is so contrived, is they're doing like all the women drills, you know, their main, you know, the women on the NXT roster, Nia Jax and all of them. Emma, I don't think Emma was there, but you know, and she probably didn't need to be, but the whole thing is how they're teasing you with the idea that Dana Brooke may be cut because she's just not, she's plateauing and she's not improving fast enough.
Oh,
I'm just thinking like, yeah, you're going to cut, like Triple H's favorite, you're going to cut Dana Brooke, the bodybuilder, who actually is doing very well and improving at a great rate. You know, it's just like, that's the thing. It's like, I'm not buying it. I'm not buying that like Dana Brooke is on the bubble because she's not improving enough when in fact she is improving and, you know, she's got, you know, star quality that they make. It's very clear when you watch her personality and everything that she's got potential star quality. And it's just like, yeah, yeah, she's on the bubble and she's going to, you know, come on.
So has Del Rio dropped this mega title yet?
I don't think he's ever dropping that title.
What?
In fact, I'm pretty damn sure he's not dropping that title. I don't think he's ever going to Mexico again unless it's with WWE. Yeah. I mean, the thing yesterday.
I suggested a week ago that he find a way to lose the title via social media. Is there any chance of this happening?
Yeah, you know what they could do is like they could show a film of him. They could do the 24/7 rule and yeah.
Yeah.
Something like that. Like if somebody sneak into the WWE arena and pin him. But yeah, no, when he no showed the Monterey yesterday, I mean, I thought that tells you all you need to know because he had no conflict. There was no reason not to go. I mean, I'm sure WWE's not letting him go, although they're you know, they're not saying that, but I'm, you know, because I can't see him on his own not going for a payoff. I mean, he was going to get good money, so why not go? But, you know, everyone knows this whole thing has just been completely, it's a complete cluster from all sides, and, you know, I think that, you know, that it's just, I don't know how to say it, but I think that WWE just basically, they will not say it, but the only thing that makes sense is that they're not letting him do anything. And he's telling people that they are, and then he's not going to. So it's just a complete mess. That's all.
So based on feedback from some recent shows, some people are not going to want to hear this, but let's tell everybody about Sting and the Night of Champions buy rate.
Why are they not going to hear it?
They were very, very upset that they felt... Do I need to talk about this? They felt you were not giving Sting enough credit.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty weird. So they did 31,000 domestic buys, which is very good. You know, it's better than the B shows have been doing this year. Overall, as compared to Battleground, it was down 3,000 worldwide. So it was up 6 in the United States, but down 9 outside the United States. So essentially, you know, and again, the difference in 3,000 buys, it's statistical margin of error. So it did the same as the last B show, but it's good. It's not a bad number. And I think Sting was a big part of it. So, I mean, so it's a good number. But the idea that it destroyed last year's show and people jumping on that, that's actually not true. What happened was last year's show was not available in a lot of markets where the pay-per-views usually are for whatever reason. You know, because UK has some shows are on free TV instead of pay-per-view. And other countries are like that as well. So the idea that I think it was what, you know, 48,000 and 77,000. So it looks like, oh my God, it's way up. It really, in the actual same territories, it was actually down a little bit. Like in the North American territory, it was down from 35 to 31. So it was actually down from last year. It wasn't up. But, you know, being down from 35 to 31 over the last year, that's still not bad. It's just like the idea that it doubled it or something like that. I mean, that's just, you know, I mean, it technically did, but it's totally misleading to say that. I mean, not doubled it, but the idea, it is up, but it's misleading to say it was up because the interest wasn't up, you know, as far as the pay-per-view buying from last year. It was actually down slightly. So that's that. You know, I mean, it was fine. I think that if Sting wasn't on the show, I'm pretty convinced it would have done a little worse. Because I think it had been, most of these pay-per-views have been doing in the low 20s. This one did 31. So it would have been in the low 20s, probably, without Sting. So he made a difference. So I have no idea why they erased him from history. That's, you know, they should be very happy with him. They shouldn't be beating him all the time. They shouldn't be erasing him from history. I don't know what he did, but there you go.
Well, see, update on Jerry Lawler and his girlfriend after the car accident on Halloween night.
So Jerry had not a scratch on him, and Lauren may have had a concussion, but her face was badly swollen, her knee was messed up, so she took a beating. She was in the emergency room for 4 hours that night. I guess a woman ran a red light and smashed right into him and totaled their car.
Not good.
Coming back from pizza on Halloween night. Coming back to watch basketball or football or something.
Jimmy Snuka, gag order issued. What's the latest on this situation?
Yeah, the judge issued a gag order. Dateline's working on a piece. And I think they don't want anyone talking to Dateline because this is how I see it. My belief is, this is not even just my belief, this is what it is. The big story here from a media standpoint is, it's Jimmy Snuka, famous wrestler and all that, and death. But the big story is like, why was the investigation dropped in 1983? Why was the investigation dropped after 2 weeks when the court, with this evidence here and everything that's been testified? Because all this stuff that's been said is all stuff that was said 32 years ago. And part of the problem with getting a conviction now is you've got to rely now on 32-year-old memories of people, which is not, I mean, on something like this, it might not be the worst because, like, you probably will remember pretty well. Like, if someone the night, if you were like working at the hospital, and it was the night of Jimmy Snuka, like Jimmy Snuka's girlfriend dying, and Jimmy Snuka telling you what happened, you probably actually will remember it pretty well. But you know, a lot of times when you know, if you're trying to recall conversations from 32 years ago, you know, it ain't the easiest thing to do. I mean, it's not even the easiest thing to do 3 weeks ago, let alone 32 years. So that's going to be one of the problems with this case. But the idea that they dropped the investigation the way they did, there's like no defense of that whatsoever. And I think that whole, you know, the whole story on why that happened, whatever it is, you know, small town protecting whatever they're protecting, and I don't know what it is. I think that they're scared shitless of how it's going to turn out in the media, because it will not turn out in the media well for them. So that's why they issued the gag order, so nobody can, you know, nobody involved in the case, including the sisters of Nancy Argentino, are bound by this gag order, and they're not even like attorneys or anything. So they're not allowed to talk. The attorneys are not allowed to talk. Jimmy Snuka is not allowed to talk, although guaranteed, you know, his lawyers will not let him talk. I mean, that would just be insane. And I'm sure he wouldn't do that. So his family's not allowed to talk. So we got a gag order until the thing goes to trial.
We've got a fight down, Matt Brown and Kelvin Gastelum. Matt Brown suffered some sort of injury, which is going to keep it up.
Ankle injury.
He, not a serious injury in the sense that he'll be back fairly soon, but he could not do this fight.
You know, it's in 2 weeks. Yep. Two and a half weeks.
Arena Monterrey in Mexico. Hey, maybe Del Rio could he drop the title there? Is that possible?
I think that he was actually booked in. I know as a fact he's booked in Mexico that day that he's not going to show up for. It'll be another no show.
Huh.
Yeah.
Man, this is no good. And Misha
Tate.
That's not
like doing business the right way on the way out. I mean, this is like right out of the 80s, you know, where you, you know, you leave the territory. I mean, even when Vince was raiding people, I mean, he tried with Harley Race. He tried real hard with Harley Race to, you know, get him to come without dropping the NWA title. But Harley Race dropped it to Ric Flair. I mean, I guess that's the difference between Harley and Del Rio. And also probably the value of the championships as well. But Harley refused, just would not do it. You know, I mean, like Del Rio, he should have just gone in there and dropped that title. I mean, you know, number one, he knew he was going before. So the last time he was there, he should have just gone, you know what? Don't tell anyone, but I'm going. And, so I need to drop the title tonight and switch the card around. And, you know, I think his last match might have been San Luis Potosí. No, that was the last big one. I'm not sure what his last match was. But anyway, the whole point is he didn't do any of this. And so, yeah, that's the deal. I think AAA is still going with the idea that he's going to come back for some dates. But I do not believe he could have gone to Monterey. He had no conflict. There's no reason for him not to. So the fact that he didn't tells me that he is not allowed to do shit. So there you go.
Is that the official word in the contract? Not allowed to do shit?
Actually, I think that the official thing is something completely different. The official thing is, I know nothing.
Huh.
I know nothing. I hear nothing. I see nothing.
Well, Misha Tate is very, very upset. She is essentially threatened to retire. She's so mad that she's not getting this title shot against Ronda Rousey.
It's not so much the title shot. It's the way it was handled. It was handled so unprofessionally.
It was, but... And listen, I'm not defending the way it was handled. I'm just saying this is not the first time. This is not the 50th time.
No, no. This will always be happening because they change their minds all the time. But this one... You know, here's the thing. It's like... I think that one of the things, and I've noticed this with some people, are stars, and I don't think that they're respected for their level of stardom, and I think that she's one of them. I think, I don't know if it's because maybe the belief is that her stardom is because of how she looks, and she's really not a great fighter, and she's not a great fighter. She's a really gutsy, gritty fighter who's got some good conditioning and has beaten some people because she just outguts them. And she's done that time after time after time, where she's about to lose to fighters that are dominating her. And she just comes back and you know, beats them through stamina or whatever it is. So, I mean, but the point is, she's a winning fighter who's very good looking and very popular, you know. I mean, you put her on TV, she's a needle mover, and they don't have a lot of them. But I don't think that, you know, she's respected because she's really not a super talent. She's really not a super talented athlete or anything like that. But, you know, she's a legitimate star. And the way that whole thing went down, whether you think that the Holly Holm fight would draw more than the Misha Tate fight, and there's no way of knowing, because the thing is, it's like they've done some cool promo videos and they've got the little intrigue of Ronda fighting a world champion boxer. But at the same time, the personal animosity buildup between these two women is non-existent. And it's been kind of boring, honestly, the build for this fight. Whereas with Ronda and Misha Tate, guaranteed, the one thing this buildup would be is not boring. Now, I know maybe you would go, well, everyone knows Ronda's going to win. Maybe.
I think you'd be surprised. I think most people who are smart, and I shouldn't even say it like that. Most people who follow the sport closely are well aware that she's going to win. But I think that they are going to do a series of video packages, and they are going to convince a lot of casual fans that this one, for real this time, is Ronda's toughest test to date, which is going to be very difficult to do with Misha Tate, even though it's been a while since they fought. The fact that Ronda has destroyed her, well, at least destroyed her once and beaten her twice.
She didn't destroy her either time.
Well, the second time in particular went three rounds, so you really can't consider that a destruction.
I mean, the first one, I mean, Misha had a little bit of offense in it. I mean, it wasn't a destruction. It was the second one. The second one was actually in some ways more, even though it went longer. I mean, it was The second one was more entertainingly one-sided in some ways. But perhaps, I don't know. I mean, we're 2 weeks away, less than 2 weeks away from the fight. And I, with Ronda, you know, she always ends up doing better than you think when it comes to the numbers. But I certainly don't feel the excitement that I did with the last fight at all, even though Holly Holm probably is a tougher test than Betch. I mean, everyone knew Betch was going to get killed, but the bottom line is that Betch did a great job of promoting it, and Ronda did a great job of promoting it, and it became a gigantic fight, except for Floyd. It's the biggest pay-per-view of the year, you know, for a freaking, you know, match in Brazil. Imagine if that was in the United States, how big it would be. But this one... Maybe it'll do the same. I don't know. With Ronda, it's hard to tell because it's a matter of she attracts a non-fight fan audience, and you just never know how big they're going to click. Maybe it'll be bigger than ever. I don't know, but I don't feel it as big as the last one. I'll say that. This one, you know, Ronda never. I don't say never, but of late, Ronda hasn't been getting good undercards at all. I think they really just kind of, you know, I mean, she's got Joanna in the semi. I mean, it's right and wrong. I mean, it's right for pay-per-view to put Joanna and Ronda on the same bill for a lot of reasons, because the people who will like Ronda are going to be more apt. If you want to make Joanna a star, that's the audience you want to make her a star with, is that audience that like is checking out Ronda anyway and can see, you know, Joanna's such a exciting, great fighter. But I think that for for Melbourne, I really would have wanted to do a really big, you know, men's fight with male stars along with Ronda, as opposed to two women's fights on top. Not that it's bad, and not, you know, and they've sold 50,000, whatever the number is. The last number I saw was 46,000. That was 2 weeks ago, so they're probably up a little bit, and you know. I mean, they sold a lot of tickets. It's going to be the second biggest crowd in UFC history. So, you know, I'm not going to go and say, well, you know, whatever. But I think that for the first time in Melbourne, I still think that you really don't want to go in there with without a men's fight in the top two fights, just because it's the first time in town. I don't know. For the variety aspect of it. But anyway, there you go.
Mailbag at WrestlingObserver.com is the email address. Jason here says, what was the deal with WCW Saturday Nitro and the other internet audio-only shows? Why would you do audio-only events? Did anybody actually listen to them, and do the audio recordings still exist?
I don't know if the recordings exist. It was the technology at the time, and it was actually a pretty big deal when it happened. It was successful, but didn't they have all kinds of technical issues? I seem to remember.
I can only imagine in the mid-90s.
Yeah, but I mean, it was the technology at the time, and that's what they did, and it was what it was. It was unique and different then.
This person here says, how was Vic Steamboat as a worker?
He was okay. I mean, it wasn't like he was bad, but... He didn't have, he never got the breaks that his brother got because he wasn't as good. And yeah, he just never really was a star or anything like that. But he wasn't bad. He wasn't bad.
Simon here says, based on New Japan World, it appears as though the early to mid 2000s was pretty bad. Do you remember this as being true?
Yeah. The mid 2000s in New Japan. They had some great matches, but. Overall direction and booking and things like that, it was pretty bad. They dug themselves in a hole. There were some really, I think pretty shitty years there where they really hurt the company. But even in like there was always good stuff though, as far as like, you know, some really, really good matches if you look for them, even in those periods. But they were just pushing the wrong guys. And they're, you know, once Inoki got out, and Ghetto and Jado start booking, it really turned around. I mean, as far as, you know, the we're past the peak. The peak was probably last year and the year before, where they had those absolutely killer, you know, all those killer cards. I mean, now it's, I don't know. It's past the peak. I mean, but it's, you know, they still have all these wrestlers are such, you know, they're so technically good and their timing is so good. I mean, that's what they practice. They're just like, when you watch them, I mean, they're just there. I mean, from it, like a lot of wrestlers, a lot of companies, you may have better high spot wrestlers, but these guys are, as far as complete wrestlers, up and down the show, they're really good.
Joe here says, what was the reasoning for WWE deciding to promote Mick Foley's Countdown to Lockdown book?
They did him a favor. I don't know what the reason is. I guess maybe they thought that he's a nice guy and we're going to do him a favor, or maybe they thought that we got a chance to do business with him, and knowing Mick, if we do this, he'll be really happy to do business with us. But it was actually a big deal to Mick because he didn't expect it. And then he wanted to do business with them because they were so nice to him. So whether that was the goal or it just worked out that way, I don't know.
This person says, have you heard anything about La Sombra potentially heading to WWE?
Yeah, there's been talk about it. Don't know that it's, you know, they Oh, my God. Think about this, okay? You see all these guys at WWE tryouts who get signed, right? You know, like ZZ, okay?
Just sure. Example,
okay? But, I mean, different guys at WWE tryouts who get signed that are marginal at best, right? You know that Sombra was at a tryout and they didn't sign him? I mean, so was Ricochet.
Oh, yeah. But,
I mean, it's just like sometimes, like, you look and I'm watching that war room, you know, with Giant Bernard and Briscoe and Giant Bernard, Matt Bloom and Briscoe and, who else? Canyon Seaman and all these guys, and they're all discussing talent. And I wasn't, when I was watching it, you know, and again, like I said, it looked a little fishy to me. But when I'm watching it, I really wasn't thinking that these are the guys who, like, and again, it wasn't necessarily them because Triple H, you know, they make their recommendations. And actually, when it came to who was the ones that Eddie Edwards and Davey Richards were the ones that actually, I think, did well in the war room, and then Triple H said no, didn't want them. But I mean, like, how there's a process. I mean, it's not like it's one guy. It's like there's this process of all these things. And like Ricochet went through this process and somehow or other, I mean, it's like the funniest thing in the whole world, honestly, that you know. You know, and Sombra is equally hilarious to me because it's like you don't really need to be like, you know, all you got to do is watch like his match from, I didn't see his match from Friday night. I can only imagine how good it was, but I've seen Sombra and Volador already many times. But I mean, I see Sombra, you know, not every week, but many weeks, and you know. And I mean, here's the other one. It's like the story that they sent a whole bunch of people down to Mexico to scout for talent, and they came back. Well, the only one that's you know, a prospect is Sombra. That's like now. And it's like you're scouting talent in Mexico, and the only one you think is a prospect is Sombra. It's like the freaking Rush is like the best heel in the business by far, with nobody even close second. And the only one you recognize is Sombra, who's like the, you know, as far as like the all around, like Sombra is a better acrobatic wrestler and has better matches than Rush, without a doubt. But I mean, as far as like what they're looking for when it comes to personality and charisma, you put those two guys next to each other, Rush and Sombra, it's like Rush is so obviously the big star of the two. Sombra is the better worker of the two, or so to speak. I don't know if worker is the right word, but more spectacular in-ring performer. But my God, you know, it's just like, I don't know, man. I don't get it. I mean, like, I mean, everyone's going to miss on something, but how do you miss on like Rush or La Sombra or some of these guys that they missed on? I mean, I don't get it at all.
Eric here says, do you ever hear wrestlers voice their concern about wrestling in high altitude, like in Denver tonight? Do they have any worries that it could hinder their performance, whether it's at a TV taping or a house show?
Well, you should ask Lance Storm that question, not me.
Actually, I can tell you, I went and trained with Lance, and it's not Denver, but Calgary is, I think, 4,000.
Yeah,
it's a decent altitude. I got in that ring, and everything was great for a few minutes, and then I hit the wall hard.
Yeah.
Hard. I am not in bad shape.
I went to Denver for Ultimate in 1996, I think it was. Whatever the year it was, the one that Dan Severn won. And I remember, you know, I was walking around and I was fine, no problem. And I'm thinking, you know, it's whatever. And there was this amphitheater. You know, it was an outdoor amphitheater with seats, right? So it's like, you know, going to go run up the thing. And I ran and I don't know, I might have gone, you know, 100 yards and it was uphill. So, I mean, it was whatever. And I was like, this isn't so bad. And it was like, snap your fingers. It wasn't this, you know, like usually like if you do something, like you go running, you gradually get more and more tired. And this, it isn't that. It's like, it just, boom, it hits. Like Cain Velasquez in Mexico City. It's like, he's just out there. And then all of a sudden it's like, I'm fucked.
Oh, yeah.
You just, that's it. You just, and you don't see it coming. And it's just there. And it's like, you've got to get acclimated to it. That's the reality. And like, yeah, wrestlers, when they go to Denver or Mexico City, I mean, they can't get acclimated. They just got to go and do it because it's just what it is. But yeah, the fighters, that Mexico City's higher altitude than Denver. And the fighters, you know the stories. And it's not just Kane. But I mean, Tisha Torres said she'll never fight there again because she just goes, you just can't have a good fight there. And Gilbert Melendez, I remember him saying that, like, you know, the amount of money it would cost to be there for a month to get acclimated. He's one of the higher paid guys. He said it's just financially, like, you know, it would cost so much that you're hardly making anything. And one guy, and I forgot who it was, but one of the guys on the last Mexico City show who actually did do that, he actually, like, he went there and he lost money, but he did win his fight. So whatever, but it's like, they're not paying the guys. That's what the problem is. You're not paying the guys enough. Kane has no excuse because Kane actually was getting paid enough to where he should have been out there like Verdum, and Verdum was getting paid enough in the main event. But those other guys that were hitting the wall and not doing well, it's like, you know, you know, it's not a lack of effort and everything. It's just like, it's just the reality of when you're not getting paid enough to do the training there. And if you don't, you're going to get tired. I mean, because MMA is just so freaking strenuous. But, you know, wrestling, not as much. But I do remember, though, like, you know, AWA used to go to Denver once a month. And, you know, it was tough for some of those guys. I remember, you know, the Jerry Blackwell in Denver stories when the AWA would come here, because often, you know, they would come to San Francisco after Denver. And, you know, you would just hear about the High Flyers against Jerry Blackwell and whoever. And, you know, the High Flyers worked a pretty fast pace. And Jerry Blackwell, you know, even in Oakland, you know, it was pretty tough when you're 420 pounds trying to keep up with the High Flyers. Although he did really well. Jerry Blackwell was a great wrestler, great, great all-around wrestler. But, you know, I was here like, oh, my God, in Denver. You know, it was, you know, between the blood pressure and the thin air and Jerry Blackwell being 420 pounds, it was not pretty.
All right, everybody. On that note, we're going to wrap it up. But we have all sorts of stuff up on the front page. If you head up right there right now, we got a brand new back issue of The Observer, the return of Ric Flair to WCW, a huge Raw, all sorts of great stuff in that issue. New issue out on Wednesday as well. Tons of stuff coming up, so check it out, everybody. We'll talk to you again after a while.